Hello, and welcome to Original Lines. I'm your host, Laura Allen, and today we're here with photographer Jennifer Loomis. Jennifer is an internationally known photojournalist and fine art photographer, best known for her portrayals of women in all stages of pregnancy. She's worked as an instructor and a mentor, and she's co-authored a book, Portraits of Pregnancy, with Hugo Kugaya. She's also the founder and the director of Adopt-A-Child Photography, a nonprofit organization that connects professional photographers to foster children who need quality profile photos. We're lucky to have her here today with us in Seattle. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi. Thank you.
How did you get started photographing pregnant women?
I was living in San Francisco as a young artist, and I, I took a class on photographing nudes of women, and I was the only woman in the class.
Really?
And this is from, like, the Learning Annex. I don't know. They don't have it here, but in San Francisco they did. So this is probably 20 or 30 years ago. And I was the only woman in the class, and it really inspired me thinking that there need to be more women photographing women. So that started me photographing women. So I called all my friends. I said, let me photograph you. And I started photographing women. And then I got an opportunity to photograph a pregnant woman. And I thought, whoa, I got goosebumps. I call it the goosebump factor. Mm-hmm. And when I get goosebumps, it means there's something big going on and it's coming from a divine place, mm-hmm. and I need to pay attention. So I realized that that shape and that form I hadn't seen in art, and I hadn't seen in art history, and it was a void, you know? So I felt like it was a blind spot culturally and visually. So I decided to focus on that. I just thought, oh, I'm going to do this for a job. So I talked to all the photographers in the Bay Area, and everybody said, nobody is going to pay you to photograph pregnant, naked women. Now, these guys, they're all men, mm-hmm. Which is fine, you know. And at that point, it was like the early 90s, and I was like, okay, you're probably right. Bad idea. But that was right after Demi Moore had been photographed by Annie Leibovitz. So instead of going to photograph naked pregnant women, because I agreed with them that this was not going to be a job, I went and I got a master's in photojournalism. So I left the Bay Area and moved to Missouri, because that was the only place I think it was the best school to go to. And I knew if I stayed in the Bay Area, I wouldn't study, because mm-hmm. I had a really good time in the Bay Area as an artist. And being a part of that whole underground community was really fun. And anyway, so I went and I got my master's in photojournalism. And I still kept that side of me, that creative side of me that was really passionate about women and women's issues. Often if I were able to do a story on my own or was assigned some kind of photo story, it would generally be about women and women's issues. So I ended up going to graduate school. In graduate school was when I got a big referral from Annie Leibovitz's photo studio. And it was kind of funny because I was in the middle of my midterms and my master's. And I thought, oh, my God, this is pre-internet. Somebody said, I want you to come and photograph my wife in Kentucky. And I was like, okay, no funny business. Go and check out Ruth Bernhard's work in your library. Mm-hmm. This is pre-Amazon. And that's how I like to do stuff. I was pretty confident, and I was pretty insistent that I do it my way, uh-huh. because I didn't know what I was walking into. It was an unusual thing, but he had gotten from Annie's studio, he'd gotten my name. So we went out there, me and a fellow student, and we did a great shoot, and that kind of launched it. But I still didn't have the idea that I could actually be a professional at that. There was no genre of maternity photography at the time. There was really not much going on. Many people weren't doing it. Maybe it was sort of the hippie people or the people who were a little more earthy. Or if you had it done, you didn't really talk about it. Mm-hmm. Very private, personal photography. Anyway, I finished my degree. I moved all around the country working with various photo editors who I believed were the best and who would teach me things that I needed. One of whom was in Indiana, and his name was Brian Moss, and he taught us to photograph with our heart, not our head. He always said, go early, stay late, look for the photos on the fringes of the event that you're at, because that is the real moments. Very Cartier-Bresson, very much looking at the decisive moment. But I felt the value of photographing from your heart and letting all that other stuff go and be guided by that. And so I studied with him for quite a while, and then I left and I moved to Africa. This is all still photojournalism.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was hired back by MSNBC.com to be one of the starting multimedia team members, doing really innovative work. Uh-huh. I mean, we were cutting edge multimedia storytelling on the web. Everybody does it now, but this is in 95, 96, something like that. And it was super exciting. And I thought, oh my God, this will be great. I should get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Again, still no thought to maternity photography. It was kind of like that thing you do in the evenings and on Saturdays when you have a glass of wine and decide you want to get kind of creative.
Uh-huh.
And I worked at MSNBC for quite a while. And I would say several years covering amazing stories of our lifetime. 9/11, Columbine, Election 2000, all of these things are burned into my memory. And then I made the decision that I was going to leave and start photographing stories for nonprofits like I had done in Africa. Because a big part of my mission has always been like, let's be the change. Mm-hmm. Let's create stories that change the way people think, cause them, have a cause and effect. People see the story, they donate money. People see the story, they want to help. So I felt very empowered with that throughout my career as a photojournalist because several steps along the way, I had managed to see that in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so by my storytelling, lives changed, and that was incredibly amazing to see. So I felt like I was going to leave MSNBC. I had learned a lot there, and I was going to start my own business telling stories, with audio and video and stills for these nonprofits like that I'd worked with in Africa, because I felt like they were trying to make a difference in the world and this was going to work. So I had bought a house, all right, while I was at MSNBC, because I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to get a house when I'm working for myself. And I had to pay my mortgage. And so I thought, oh my God, how am I going to get some quick money? So I had a couple of these beautiful maternity photos that I had done, and I went and I hung them up.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all right, I had no marketing budget, so I did what I like to call guerrilla marketing. I was just like, okay, where do pregnant women go? I had never been pregnant. And right down the street from me in Seattle was the epicenter, or ground zero, to use a bad term, but where all the pregnant women went to get fittings and buy pumps and do everything that pregnant women need, because there's a lot of things that you have to be thinking about when you're about to have a baby. And I asked the owner, I said, I was also very big on community and relationships, and I still am. And I befriended her, and we had coffee, and we talked about life and jobs and businesses and stuff. And she let me hang some stuff up. That was the beginning of it. Because then I was talking to a King 5 professor, or a King 5 cameraman, about how do you do video for these nonprofits? And he goes, wait a minute. He goes, do you photograph pregnant women? And I said, I do, but don't tell anyone. Because I didn't want the Gates Foundation, who I was a client, who was a client uh-huh. of mine, or CARE International, who was also a client of mine, coming to my website and seeing nude pregnant women, because it was still a brand, right?
Yeah,
I was still aware of branding, and, you know, I wasn't thinking in that way. I was just thinking that I would freak out if they came and there was a picture of a woman from Africa with, you know, whatever I'd done there, like maternal health, and then going over here and seeing this naked pregnant woman. I thought, all right, that can't happen. So I said to Tom, I said, no, you can't.
Yeah.
I don't want a story on me. He talked me into it. He said it'd be a great Mother's Day story. And so I said, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
That was the end of it. And my phone, I had tapped into something culturally and socially and emotionally going on in our, at that time mm-hmm. with women needing to feel beautiful and needing some sort of documentation of this precious 9 months, many of them doing IVF, many of them having fertility issues. And it was mind-blowing what happened. I had to get 3 phone lines.
Oh, wow.
Because people were calling and it was busy
mm-hmm.
all day long. It was staggering. and empowering and exhausting and pretty amazing as I started to realize, oh my gosh, there is a need here. Mm-hmm. And making these women feel beautiful and capturing this image for their children is special and important and something that's nobody's doing and gives me goosebumps.
How has it evolved for you over that 20 years? Has the process evolved?
The process has definitely evolved. My style has definitely evolved. Uh-huh. It happened relatively fast and I rode the wave. I've done kind of a full circle in the sense that, I started out before this was a genre. It's been attributed to me that I started the maternity genre, and I didn't say that. Somebody said that. Could be me, could have been a whole bunch of things, but I can tell you there was no such thing as maternity photography before I started. So now it's a genre. It used to be pregnancy photography. Now it's mm-hmm. maternity. And I peaked about 2009, 2010, my book came out, and I was burned out.
I imagine. It sounds like a wild.
I was burned out. So the recession hit. Recession was not a recession for me. Those were some of my best years, best numbers, coming off of all the media that the book generated and all the media that the story of being a maternity photographer generated. But I was tired. And so a couple things happened, and we're going to get a little up close and personal here, but I do believe it's empowering for people to hear this story, because I think as an artist, you're on a journey, right? It's the story arc. And if you can make sense of your story and what that story means to you and to your work, then your art is that much more deep, and there's more depth to your work, and there's more meaning, and it's more a complete story of yourself. And when we can integrate those stories, then I feel like we have a more holistic photo or image of who we are and our identity. So for me, around 2010, I was told I couldn't have a kid. Mm. And my whole life had been photographing other people pregnant and other people's kids. Because I had then, pretty shortly after I started photographing maternity, people started asking me to do their children too, because mm-hmm. I was a photojournalist, so they liked that stuff. And so I was devastated. I mean, cry. I thought, okay, I quit. Closed my studio. I'd been in my studio almost 10 years in the Central District, in an old house. Done. Closed it. Moved across town. Walked across Spain, laid off all my people, pretty much was lost. I call that year the lost years. And I was lost. I walked across Spain on the Camino solo. I didn't care if I came back. I didn't have anything really. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I came back as we do. You think you're like, I'm gone. I'm just out of here. Come back. You're still who you are. But I thought, okay, I needed to make money. So I photographed again, because that's what people wanted, right? And it was hard and painful. And every day I just felt like I was salt rubbed on my wounds. And then I had a client come in who I'd been working with for a while. And they were a couple. And they had one embryo left. And it was two moms. And I said, Jen, we think you'd be a great mom. And we'd like you to have this embryo.
Oh.
And I was like, I was in the middle of photographing them pregnant with their second kid. And I started bawling, of course. And I didn't end up using that embryo, but what it did do was open the door in my mind to alternative methods for becoming a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, they have free photography, because I wouldn't have my son if it weren't for them. It wasn't their embryo. But what that did was, so I would say there were several years there with my work. My work was growing. I was doing all kinds of new stuff, and then it plateaued out. My work flattened out for a while because I felt so empty, and I was so hollow. I was still doing my best work, and then I actually was able to get pregnant, and I had my son. And it's been fascinating to see in the last 4 years as I'm starting to go back online again, right? Because let's say I took off in 2010. My son was born in 2014. So there was like 4 years where I was just kind of like doing it. I would argue that it coincided with me moving into this space. And really, I had, shared space in another studio with several photographers. And when I finally said, you know what, I'm showing up for myself. I'm getting my own space. I'm going to see how it goes for a year. If I'm still not happy, then I'm going to do something else. Mm-hmm. Showed up to myself, found my space, found my light, had new light challenges again, felt the fear a little bit. And now that my son's four, my work is expanding in such incredible ways that I never thought could happen.
Anyway. I'll tell you what, this is like a perfect place for a break. So let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with Jennifer Loomis.
Hey there. Did you know that you can find Original Lines on both iTunes and Stitcher? So whether you have an iPhone or Android, you can always catch the latest episode. Be sure to subscribe to us, and we love reviews. Thanks.
Okay, and we're back with Jennifer Loomis. All right, and before the break, we were talking about how your art has kind of, it's been part of your practice for happiness, I guess I should say. Is that a good way? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it has, actually. My work, my clients, mm-hmm. How people... It's a tightrope, what mm-hmm. I do, because I'm paid mm-hmm. to make photos, mm-hmm. right? So with that comes a subtle amount, a subtle amount of, I got to make you look good, mm-hmm. which I want to do,
right?
Because I want to empower these women to see their beauty. But it's interesting in the art world because I'm not making work and then going out and selling it.
Right.
I'm being paid in advance by someone to make work for them. So it's interesting, and I like it because I think of the turn of the century paintings where they would hire the families would hire a portrait painter mm-hmm. to paint the family. And if you study that, they're made, you know, they want their family to look good. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there was that whole gravitas where they brought in the flies and stuff started to show that, you know.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting because the word artist is a term that we use to think of somebody toiling away in their space, channeling the heavens, if you will, or just creating something and then putting out there for the world to consume.
Right.
And mine's a different way of going about that, right?
Well, it sounds more collaborative. I mean, you're actually working almost equally with your client. You know, it's your eye, which is trained and everything, but then it's your client's wishes, which is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, so sometimes I feel a little guilty when I say, oh, I'm an artist, because I feel like in the traditional sense of the artist, I'm not. I'm not in there just like with models working and doing stuff. But I am an artist because if you start to look at my work... versus, say, a traditional portrait photographer, mm-hmm. it's very different.
Yeah.
It's very different. And I never, ever wanted to grow up and be a portrait photographer.
Yeah.
It's not what I mean. It's not my game. I mean, I spent 3 years in graduate school studying the art of telling a story mm-hmm. and staring at photographs by the best photojournalists in the world. And really, that has had a huge impact on me.
Did you ever want to do field work?
In photojournalism?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did that in Africa.
Oh, okay.
So I worked for newspapers and magazines all over the U.S. Mm-hmm. And then, and I worked in Japan mm-hmm. and I worked in East Africa. So I did that. The deal with photojournalism is it's a dying profession. As cameras get better and newsrooms' budgets are cut, they're basically handing photo cameras to the reporters. And when you live in an international, if you live internationally and you're a photojournalist, you got to cover war to make your name. At that point, this is 20 years ago. And I wanted nothing to do with that. I had seen a lot of broken souls, people with PTSD. I had seen you can't unsee a lot of the stuff that these war photographers see. And I didn't want that lifestyle. I wanted more control, and I personally was very adamant that living in East Africa, I wanted to show the stories of hope. Mm-hmm. Africa is not all famine and war. Mm-hmm. There are busy entrepreneurs working there. There are mothers trying to feed their children. I mean, there's a lot going on in Africa, and I felt like my voice was to show the images of hope. And so when I got the opportunity to go photograph a war in Eritrea, I turned it down, and that's when I accepted the job at MSNBC to come back here.
It seems to me like adding the images and adding just the sum total of hope and beauty and the more of the positive things is important. I mean, it's also important because I have other artist friends who are, you know, very politically motivated in their art or in their writing or whatever it is. And I think that's important. It's vital that stories be told, but I think it's also vital that the beauty and the peace and the hope in the world is also portrayed.
Well, I agree. And I'm doing that in a way where I feel like I am showing these women their beauty. Mm-hmm. So by one woman at a time, I'm sort of saying, look at how beautiful you are. Mm-hmm. Look at how great your relationship is. Put these on the wall and remind yourself when things get tough, because they get tough after you have kids. But the other piece that's not yet been spoken, or how do I say this? The other piece of this that I feel like I haven't yet brought forward into the world is the womb is a place of intense battles. The pregnant body is ground zero for every chemical that's in the world, in the earth, in the environment. Breast milk is some of the most toxic stuff. Why? Because every chemical, we're the top of the food chain, right? So I've still got things to say. I'm a very passionate political person, and I get pretty angry about a lot of things that are going on right now. And so it's just a matter of figuring out when I'm going to strike, because I feel like if you strike and no one's listening, then there's really nobody, big deal.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have the most eyes on you for it to have any kind of impact, which is why a celebrity really has some power that they can use. And they do. Many of them use it very wisely. But it's political currency, right? So I haven't figured it out. And honestly, you know, the pregnant body is very confusing for art world, you know, for people who are judging shows and trying to figure out what if it's got anything of value, you know. It's confounds a lot of people because it's unfamiliar. You know, it blows my mind how infrequently the pregnant belly shows up in women's shows. Like the Seattle Art Museum had that show for honoring women. Mm-hmm. There were zero pregnant bellies in that show. I wrote them a letter.
Did you? Good.
Never heard from them. Wrote them a letter.
It's a weird sort of a between that whole Madonna whore thing. It's almost like sex. Oh my God. But it's almost like this beautiful motherhood, this picture of Mary with the baby at her breast, which is okay. But it's between those two things. It's a liminal sort of a.
Yes.
It's really a weird.
Makes people very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So much so that they never put any. There's not a lot of attention turned on it.
That's interesting.
Annie Leibovitz, she did that with Demi Moore. Mm-hmm. That was, I mean, if you read back when that happened, I mean.
Very transgressive.
Holy cow. Safeway, all these places that had a Vanity Fair, they were putting brown paper wrappers on them. They were canceling subscriptions. Like, it was huge, huge, huge repercussions for that. But good on her. It was actually Vanity Fair. Right? Good on them for doing it. Now we see Britney Spears on the cover, you know, and Annie's still doing that kind of stuff. So there's some more acceptance of it. But like where I'm curious, and I haven't done much digging in the last year, so things might have changed, but where are those pregnant women? Mm-hmm. What, you know, Instagram has sort of become a spot for people to like cull and curate a bunch of images of pregnancy. But like in high art, in the big art world, Haven't seen it yet, you know. I feel like I'll have made it when one of my nude torsos is big and large in a museum of modern art, you know.
There you go. There you go.
Why not?
Well, let me, we're getting close to having to wrap up. I want to ask you a question I ask everybody. And why do you think people make art?
I think you can't not. I think if you're an artist, it's an instinct, it's an urge, it's a sensation, it's a pulse in you that you, if you're not doing it, it feels like you're wearing uncomfortable clothing, you know? It feels like you're not, it feels like you're wearing a straitjacket, right? Like, I feel like people who are creators, it's how they breathe, you know? I think of my favorite creators, like Kiki Smith or another woman I love. She's a young woman, and she's a buddy of mine. And these people just breathe art, you know? They like, move in the world, and they've made something amazing and magical, you know, that stirs something deep in your soul. And musicians are artists. Like, I just went and saw Paul Simon the other day. You know, I realized that his words kind of were with me. I grew up with his words. And as I was a young artist sort of trying to figure out my place in this adult world, his words resonated with me and sort of carried me along as I was ebbing and flowing with melancholy and sort of figuring out this path that I was on. And, you know, Leonard Cohen, another great artist, you know, I mean, so many that, And art is a way of being.
All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
This has been super. This has been fascinating stories. Where can people find out more about your work?
Oh, so I have a website, JenniferLoomis, LOOMIS.com. I have an Instagram page, which is Jennifer Loomis Photo. And that's fun. I love Instagram right now. It's just a place where I play and I put things up and I see what works and I see what doesn't. I have words of wisdom. And if I don't like it, I take it down. And I don't know. It's a fun thing that I'm just experimenting with. But yeah. Okay. And they can email me. I'm always open to chatting with people.
Okay. Well, good. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
This has been super.
Yeah. It was really great. Thank you for asking.
Oh, yeah. And that's it for today's episode of Original Lines. Find out more about us on our website at www.twoponiespress.com or find us on your favorite podcast program, iTunes, Stitcher, and more. Thanks, and be sure to like and subscribe.